Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Are you ready to recap a tremendous sports day yesterday, Keith?
Oh, of course I am. I was born ready.
Are you sure you are, though?
No, probably not. So, I'm not as into it as you guys are.
Look, we're going to get to Crochet, who was phenomenal. And the Red Sox,
despite
Crochet being awesome.
What's going on?
The Red Sox, I'm sorry, had a terrible weekend. Despite Crochet being awesome. Crochet was great. Rest of the team, not so much.
What happened?
It hasn't gone great for them.
You weren't flipping back and forth yesterday? No Masters yesterday?
No.
None?
Not really a Masters guy. I'm telling you, I could fake it and put it on. No, I'm not. I'm up to my eyeballs in Yellow Jackets. I'm binging Yellow Jackets because I got to do the podcast tonight. It's a show that I still love. Everybody else seems to hate, but I'm watching it. So I had to do that. I also was watching a little Garrett Crochet just strike out White Sox left and right.
Yeah, really I watched that too. I flipped it. Not even for a second. You didn't flip over and go, what's going on with Rory over there?
No. I can't fake interest in Rory McIlroy. I know Shime is very passionate about it. He hates him. That's great. I think you won some coin.
I did. You know what? I'm happy you asked.
I remember that.
I won some coin on Rory.
Two hams. That's great.
If Oberg didn't choke on the 18th hole and finish in the top five, I would have had a real nice Sunday. Not that anybody cares. Thank you for asking. I won some coin on Rory. Thank you.
No, I mean, when Tiger was in it, it became much more...
Sick brag, bro.
Just for the record, I was asked.
When Tiger was in it, it was much more must-watch, whether you're rooting for him, against him, rooting for history, all that stuff. Since then, I don't know. I know Rory's super famous. Like there's a handful of guys that are super famous, but they are what, a tenth of how famous Tiger was.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. There's other ways to spend my Sundays.
Billy, you must have watched.
Billy's up to his neck.
Billy, you were watching a lot of the Masters coverage yesterday, right?
Oh my God, pimento sandwiches just on my couch. It was get out of here.
So that's
I did see.
What does get out of here mean? That means you watched no Masters.
I didn't watch a second of
Nick.
No, I was watching Crochet.
What?
Garrett Crochet.
No one watched.
I was crocheting.
Pump a gas.
I would rather crochet than watch golf.
I would probably rather crochet.
Now, Terp, I know from talking to Terp beforehand, Terp at least had an excuse.
He's a degenerate.
He was at the Celtics game.
Oh, yeah.
So he at least had an excuse for not watching. Although
good lineup they put out there.
It didn't end until like 7 o'clock, so he could have gone home and watched it.
I remember covering
none of you guys watch any Masters. None of you.
No.
That's unbelievable.
I remember covering a Celtics game years ago that Doc Rivers got thrown out of on Masters, and he basically, I think, did it so he could watch the Masters.
Yeah, no, he's told that joke maybe like 10 straight years. I got kicked out so I could watch Sunday.
Yeah, he did. I was there.
Hilarious doc.
Like, Masters going on.
So, no, I mean, I get what you're saying, that there's no face of it, although Rory's pretty close when it comes to name recognition and Q rating. He's not Tiger, but he's closer than a lot of the other guys in the mix yesterday.
Is he still going out with that Carolyn Wozniacki?
No, old news.
I'm a big WAG guy, Nick. I knew they were together. I didn't know if they were still together.
Yeah, you had some working WAG knowledge there.
I saw him. He went ready for another early humble brag.
Yeah.
When I was, remember the old golf tournament?
Deutsche Bank. Loved it.
So I got sent there one time. Big golf reporter. You can hit brag of the week.
I don't know what you're doing back there, Nick.
Sick brag, bro.
Where was that? So it was actually pretty crazy because, you know, used to going to like the major sports, and we went to, it was like a press conference, and there wasn't a lot of people in the media section asking questions. But I went for both Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy. And then when Rory McIlroy gets up to leave, he is a tiny little man. You could stick him in your pocket, and yet he pipes it 350 off the tee. And you're like, how is that possible? He is a little dude.
Yeah, he's not a big man.
No.
So I also, if you want to keep that ready, Nick, I've covered a Deutsche Bank Classic in my day.
Sure. Sick
brag. Tiger, Mickelson.
Yeah.
Gonna wear it out today.
I don't know if I talked to Rory.
I saw Dustin Johnson, and I was following him for a little bit.
Nice.
You know who was there?
Paulina.
Yeah, Paulina. Speaking of wags.
Yeah,
she was walking around trying to be the incognito. Yeah. I'm like, you're not really all that incognito.
It's Massachusetts. You're not
like
blending
bright
in.
Bright blonde, like the tightest clothes ever. And you're like,
Where is that Mansfield? Where was that tournament?
Norton. Norton.
You're in Norton. You are not blending in. There, yeah. Toots.
No, we saw her.
Yesterday was, but even if you were at a golf tournament because of Rory, like that's as close to Tiger Q rating these days as I think you're going to get, even more so than Scheffler and guys like this. You had the drama all day long. It's him and DeChambeau. He blows the lead right away. DeChambeau takes the lead. Then he falls apart. Justin Rose out of nowhere. Rory should close it out on 18. He doesn't. He's blown the lead like 18 million times. He wins in a playoff. And at no point, you're like, I got to go check it out. Even for the drama of it. No. Even if you don't care about the golf, just the drama
didn't,
of a guy
didn't suck
choking, falling apart. None of it.
No.
It was honestly excellent. You missed out.
I'm sure. It sounds like a nice little event. It was not one of my favorites. We were talking about the non-majors and the ones that we like. That's not really on my list. I think I watched more of it when I was a kid, and part of that was probably Tiger. And then also, I think I golfed a little bit more. I don't really golf anymore. Yeah, I don't have the time to golf.
So I don't golf either.
I used to like it. I sucked. I've always been terrible at it. But I'd go a couple times a year. Not much more than that, honestly. But at least I was a little bit more into it. And then I would watch the majors, and I'd watch the Ryder Cup. And that's just kind of phased out. You know, like a lot of things. Like as you get older, and we're speaking to people that maybe you have kids, you sort of give up certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Like I used to watch every UFC event. Like every UFC event I watched for years. I can't remember the last one I've watched now. So
wasn't even your top five?
It wasn't.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard.
That's
to kind of
difficult to do. Yeah,
but you know, so like you sort of like to give stuff up, and we don't talk a lot of UFC on the show. We don't until right now talk about a lot of golf on the show. So it's like, all right, I'm not even using that for work anymore. So I'm like, all right, we'll just sort of like go away from it.
But
I'm glad there was great theater.
Well, and that's what it was. I mean, it had everything. A guy who was going for the career slam, who was very successful early on and won four major tournaments, and he thought it'd be a foregone conclusion, he'd do it, had this roller coaster yesterday. And really throughout the tournament, I mean, in the first round, he had this great first round. He falls apart. He double bogeys twice in the last three or four holes, whatever it was. He's the first guy to win at the Masters with four double bogeys in a round. So it tells
Jeez.
You like the up and down nature, the back and forth. He's fighting.
What was his biggest lead? Because wasn't he at one point?
I think at one point he had a 5-stroke lead yesterday. And, you know, he bogeys, he fritters that away.
Were you counting your hams at that point?
Yes.
Yeah.
Between him and Oberg, I had a lot of hams counted. And, you know, he fritters it away. I forget where it was, the 13th, I believe.
Uh-huh.
He doubled and then Rose birdied. And so it was like a 3-shot swing. And there were two-shot swings right away where on the first hole, Rory blows the lead. Then DeChambeau gives it right back. And, no, it was great, great theater. And from that standpoint, whether you care about golf or not, just the person in there trying to get through and break through and do something they've been trying to do their whole career, sixth person in the history of golf to win the career slam, first guy in a long time outside of Tiger to do it. You know, you're talking about Arnie Palmer and Jack Nicklaus and Gene Sarazen and guys like this, Ben Hogan. And so to break through and do that was just good theater. And on top of it, he's fighting it. He misses a short putt 5 feet on the 18th hole where he could have won it. He has to go to a playoff where you think he's got no shot. At least I thought he had no shot. I was flushing hams at that point. And, you know, he's able to stick his second shot and then stick the putt to edge out Justin Rose at the end. So it was good, good drama, good theater. And I would tend to agree with Scheim on some level if you were listening today.
Yeah, he said he choked.
He did choke. I mean, it was a choke-off yesterday.
Yeah, he should not have been between
Rose and DeChambeau and him. I mean, it was who could have the biggest choke yesterday?
Yeah.
But he wound up getting the win, and it was a good, good sports day. But I was flipping in to Garrett Crochet. You can jump in with all your thoughts on the Masters if you'd like. We'll take him at 617-779-7937. I'm not going to freeze you out, unlike these guys, on the Masters.
No, if you want to talk Masters, though, Jones is your guy.
But Crochet yesterday,
yeah.
I was drawn into the Red Sox more than I expected because I think they had a terrible weekend. Despite what Crochet did yesterday,
horrible.
They had a terrible weekend.
You can't really guarantee or expect sweeps, but the closest one would be the Chicago White Sox, who lost 121 games a year ago, and that's when they had Garrett Crochet. So now they're worse. Like it could be a team that matches a historic loss total.
Going into this series, they have won two games all year. They've doubled their win total coming out of the series, and they could have won that game yesterday.
They had a winning record against the Red Sox last year, didn't they? Or no, maybe the Red Sox were 4-3.
I think it was 4-3 Red Sox.
But still, like the fact that it's anywhere close. And we were looking at this 10-game stretch that the Red Sox had ahead of them, including these three, and we were saying, all right, 7-3? 7-3? Like 8-2 would be great. Like just to knock off this 500 start. And you're playing a bunch of bad teams, White Sox twice, and then a Rays series, which starts tonight. You should go on a nice run to drop the first two games, and the only win you get out of there is the Garrett Crochet game, and it's even that is like a nail biter, like that brutal start. And we always say all the time, oh, it's early. Well, these games also count, and if they miss out on the playoffs, fast forward 6 months, if they miss out on the playoffs by a game or two, like remember when they lost to the White Sox? A team that might lose 130 games this year, that is going to be pretty rough. It puts a lot more pressure on them now because they still can go 8-2, 7-3 on this stretch, but there's very little room for error now. Like you got to sweep one of these next two series and then only drop one other game to get where we want them to be.
So Crochet, if you're unaware, had a perfect game into the sixth, a no-hitter into the eighth. Ironically, the hit he gives up is to Chase Meidroth, who was in the deal for Garrett Crochet.
Yeah, he's a nice little player. Got to see him a lot this year.
He had a good weekend. Yeah, he made his debut this weekend. He had a good weekend for the White Sox. Red Sox had a terrible, terrible weekend. And outside of our guy Kyle Teal, maybe Chicago got a little bit more. I'm not regretting the trade or anything, but it's just interesting to see that's the guy that got the hit. Mm-hmm. And I swear to God, I don't even think Meidroth had rounded first base. And Cora's walking out to the mound to get Crochet out of there. He was at 96 pitches. I saw Cora after the game say something to the effect of, I've never been so happy for a guy to give up a hit in that situation, because he would have stuck with Crochet with the no-hitter. 96 pitches? Did they need to get Crochet out of there? I was screaming at the television when they took him out.
I didn't think so. We saw him go 102, 107 in back-to-back starts. Now, maybe that was part of the thought process, too.
Oh, I think it was. I think they're worried about the overall workload, and I don't know if they look at it in a one-game snapshot. You know, it's like how Robert Kraft looks at the salary cap. Every 3 years, you got to be in line. Maybe every three starts, you got to be at an X amount of pitch count or whatever. But Cora made it clear, like, if there wasn't a no-hitter on the line, Crochet would have been out before 96 pitches. And there was already an out in the inning. He was mowing guys down. He finished with 11 Ks yesterday.
Yeah, he was dominant.
I didn't see any reason to take him out. But, I mean, it didn't completely come back to bite him, even though Whitlock gave up a run there.
True. So the Red Sox are now 8-9. And they're 3-1 in games that Crochet starts. So one of the issues we had going into the year was, all right, Crochet's really good. I was talking myself into Walker Buehler. We're like TBD on Tanner Houck based on his spring and sort of the second half of last year. And then it was like injury replacements. So you're like, wait a minute. Like this rotation was very much kind of pieced together with duct tape a year ago. And now this year it's the same thing. Now at least you have Garrett Crochet. So it's not exactly the same thing. But for the first half, Tanner Houck was a legitimate all-star. So you did have a frontline guy last year. That's what you have this year, but not much else. Like now, we talked a lot about buying opportunity or sucker's bet when it came to the Red Sox winning the division because they were not the favorite. They weren't even the second favorite in Vegas. And maybe, I guess we're seeing why early on. Doesn't mean they can't rebound from this. They're, 8-9 to start the year. But the guys not named Crochet aren't helping you, and maybe more glaring, the lineup isn't hitting, right? Because we've actually seen a couple of good starts the last couple of days that have been wasted.
No, like the only guy hitting, Nick, what were you just telling me about Trevor Story? He's like our guy, Trevor Story.
Story's killing it.
He's hit like over 300, I think.
But he's like, but what were you telling me about? They were the only team in baseball that hadn't hit a home run all week,
so
or something.
They
like
hadn't
that?
Hit a home run in a week, and they led the majors like strikeouts that week also.
Yeah, they strike out a lot.
Oh, it was like 62 strikeouts, zero home runs.
A fair amount. They struck out this weekend 29 more times.
They strike out 10 times a game.
They made 5 more errors. They still lead baseball in strikeouts and errors after
this
weekend.
You want a team to strike out and then boot the ball around? We got one for you. It is a disaster. Also, how about this? Rich Keefe's stats and info department.
Yes.
Since scoring 18 runs against the Cardinals on Sunday Night Baseball.
Yes.
The Red Sox have played 7 games. Mm-hmm. They have scored 14 runs.
Not great.
So they're not even at
not great,
that
Mom.
One game. They haven't even reached that number yet.
And they're playing the Blue Jays, who are so-so, and the White Sox, who are one of the worst teams, we think, in baseball history.
That's right.
Yeah.
They are. Yeah, they might be. They have a good chance to be the worst team in the history of baseball. They were 2-10 entering the matchup.
So we talked a little bit about Crochet yesterday. I hated Coor giving him the hook. Crochet was great. Crochet has been great through four starts. As Keith said, they're 3-1 in his starts. They're 8-9 overall. They just dropped 2-3 to the White Sox. Friday was a disaster. Saturday wasn't much better. A team finally got to Aroldis Chapman. But Friday, it was 11 more strikeouts, 5 more errors. Saturday, 11 strikeouts. They didn't make an error in either of the final two games. They got that out of their system with 5 of them on Friday night. I mean, Friday was a disaster. That's how you start that series. I thought the Red Sox had a chance to sweep. I said out of these 7 games against the White Sox, you got to take 6. Like, and I don't think that's asking too much. This team is horrible.
No.
This team's terrible. And not only did they lose the first game,
they got dominated.
They got drilled in that game, and then they lose an extra innings on Saturday.
Yeah, it was insane watching the Friday game because you're like, this White Sox team sucks. Like, this is a good time to play them. And then it's just hit. There's piling, they're running up the score on you. You're like, what is going on? And that's an issue. You can't ignore that. I mean, you lose 2 games, and obviously 2 different ways of losing the games, but you're booting the ball all around. The bats have completely dried up, and really the one guy you can rely on is Garrett Crochet. So right now, everything's kind of going against him. You know, it's funny. The game yesterday was kind of similar to Garrett Crochet's first game, even though he pitched a lot better this time around. But it was Willy Abreu was all the offense in the season opener, and then Trevor Story was all the offense in yesterday's game.
And that's pretty much how they've been rolling so far this year. So your thoughts on what was a bad Red Sox weekend, despite Crochet flirting with a no-hitter yesterday. Your thoughts on Crochet, his start, Coor giving him the quick hook. Coor in general, overseeing another bad start out of the Boston Red Sox. Errors and Ks over the top for this team. You could jump in on it. Plus, your thoughts on the Masters yesterday. If you were watching, unlike these guys, great day, great sports day to sit down and watch. Rory McIlroy, are you happy for him? Something we'll get to coming up with all your phone calls. 617-779-7937. It is a mock draft Monday here on Jones and Keith. We'll get you a mock draft, break it down, how it looks for the Patriots at pick number 4 at 10:45. And when we come back, the Red Sox and their issues. How much blame is on Alex Coor to this poor start?
3 balls and 2 strikes to Duran. The pitch is swung on and missed. He got him. And the ball game is over. A night to forget for the Red Sox. But hopefully a night to remember for Coop. The fireworks explode. 11-1 Chicago. Sox need a bounce back tomorrow in a big-time way.
Terrible weekend for the Red Sox. Crochet tried to salvage it yesterday. Great start out of him. No fault of his own. Could have had a no-hitter. I thought Coor had a quick hook with him, but no harm, no foul. Mm-hmm. They got the win. Mm-hmm. Whitlock got out of the inning. Whitlock got boned in the meantime on a, I would call it a questionable call, but it was a clear strike. So the Red Sox salvage a game in the series.
They avoid the sweep at the hands of the White Sox.
They're going against one of the worst teams, we think, in the history of baseball. Last year, they were one of the worst teams in the history of baseball.
That's right.
Think they're going to be there again.
Yep.
As Keith pointed out, they subtracted Crochet. You now have him on your side, and you still barely got a win against this team.
They were on an 8-game losing streak when you opened the series, and they scored 11 runs on you Friday. Now you're booting the ball around.
And they walked it off on Saturday.
Yeah.
So Friday, to me, really summarized all of their issues. Again, 11 strikeouts, 5 errors. They struck out 11 times on Saturday. Yesterday was better. No errors. I think it was 7 Ks off the top of my head in that game. Yeah, 7 strikeouts. So 29 more strikeouts, 5 more errors this weekend. They lead baseball still in strikeouts, 165 compared to 160 for the Rockies, though they played 2 extra games. And they lead the Bigs in errors as well, 19, also over the Rockies, who have 15 in second place. In a related story, when you get to the Colorado Rockies, they're 3-12 this year.
So they're off to a rocky start.
They are indeed.
Jeez.
So that is now the worst team in baseball.
Yeah.
And you have more strikeouts than them, more errors than them. And it speaks to why you're underachieving in a game under 500 at 8-9. They're sloppy, offensively, defensively. How much of that is on the manager, Alex Coor?
It's hard to say because defensively, we've talked about this for years, right? They've had a lot of teams that weren't great defensively, and we looked at the people that were out there. And this is a year where they actually made a pretty significant change, or so we thought. And if Coor just stuck with Devers at third, I think we'd all be saying, yeah, this might be on Coor. But he made the call. He made the tough call At least him, because he has to deal with the personality. It's not tough for us from the outside, but he made the tough call in the clubhouse and put Bregman at third, and he's one of the main reasons why you have so many errors. So that part, like, I don't know if I really blame on Cora as much. It looks like it should be a pretty good defensive alignment. I mean, Campbell's a little shaky, but you want him in your lineup, and where else are you going to play him? I know he's played some outfield. The defense in the outfield's pretty good, like, personnel-wise. So I don't know about that one. And then when you get into the strikeout part of it, it's like, all right, is this a Cora thing, or this is more
Breslow and driveline?
Yes,
yeah.
It's that, which I think, I mean, Cora's going along with it, and he has a big contract to, you know, go along with things that, yeah, that he's dictated
if
to.
If he disagreed with it, he could have got out. He was a free agent at the end of last year. He took their money. So if he really, truly, fundamentally disagreed with Breslow and driveline, yeah, he had an out. He didn't have to sign.
I know. But, all right, so let's say if we boil the driveline thing down to, like, smack the ball in the air, hit the ball in the air, hit home runs. I feel like that's not how Cora wants to do it. I feel like Cora, even a couple years ago when the team would be going, even in the clubhouse a little bit, when the team was like, at the time they were doing well, he's like, I want an athletic team, and we have an athletic team. Not every team in baseball is that way. Nope. You have guys that are just boppers and literally three outcome players, and that's it. Cora likes to steal. He likes hit and run. And, you know, a guy like Jarren Duran is such a great example of, how about don't hit the ball in the air? Hit the ball, like, between short and third, and you might even still get to second base with your speed. I feel like he would rather that, but you don't. You want to hit home runs, and you're not hitting home runs, and you're striking out. The strikeouts of themselves, I don't think, is the biggest issue in the world, but you have to then smack dingers. And if you're not smacking dingers, then the strikeouts then kill you.
Right.
Right, because the Dodgers are striking out really at a high rate this year as well, but they got, what, 2-3 times as many home runs as the Red Sox do? So your offense is going to look a whole lot different.
So when I say some of it has to be on Cora,
I mean,
somewhere,
the manager,
in there.
Yeah.
You're the manager. The Red Sox in 2024, in terms of overall errors, were second in baseball, 115 last year. In 2023, they were second in baseball, 102 errors. And I think the last couple of years, and I brought this up, sloppy fielding, poor fundamentals defensively. I brought this up the last couple of years, and what you constantly hear from Red Sox fans in defense of Alex Cora is, what's he supposed to do? He's got Pedro Reyes playing shortstop.
Pablo.
And they have, I'm sorry, Pablo Reyes playing shortstop. You have all these injuries out there.
Kike Hernandez started the year, was it 2 years ago, and he had like a million errors.
So what you hear is they don't have the personnel. And it's like, okay, they don't have the personnel.
Yeah, see, now they might.
What's the excuse now? Yeah. You have Bregman, who's won a gold glove at third. Story's healthy, so you can't blame the shortstop. If you want to get on Campbell a little bit, fine. Their outfield is supposed to be gold glove caliber across the board.
Yeah.
So what's the excuse? And at some point, I got to look at the manager, I think, more for that than the K's, because I agree with you. I don't think Alex Cora believes in striking out at the clip they're striking out. I think it bothers him more than it bothers Breslow and the driveline guys. And I think you've heard that. We heard it last week when he went on WEEI Afternoons. He said, I hate the strikeouts. He said they're going to normalize. They're going to sort themselves out. They didn't last year. We'll see if they do this year. But I still can't completely let him off the hook for that, because if you didn't want to deal with the Red Sox and their approach and their analytics, you didn't have to take their money. You don't have to take this job. You were a free agent. You were reportedly going to be highly sought after. You reportedly were going to have your pick of the litter for jobs. And so you decided to come back here. On some level, you're complicit with that, even if you stamp your feet and say you don't like strikeouts. On some level, you're on board with it. So where's Alex Cora on the list? I don't know how high up or low down he is on the list. He's on the list, though, because they're doing it again, and they should have the personnel defensively.
Yeah, it's strange. 13 different players have committed at least one error. Bregman leads the way with 3, but like everybody has had an issue with it. I mean, even their catchers all have errors. Like, they got a pitcher on there with an error. Like, it's a little bit of everybody, and you would hope that, at least with some of the guys, right? I don't know about Christian Campbell, but with Bregman and Story and really all the outfielders, won't over the course of a long season, that should level off a little bit. We're like, yeah, they're going to have an error here or there, but they just have so many early, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it has any carryover from spring or whatever.
Well, is that a fair thing to wonder? Like, do they put in the work in spring training where they're sloppy to start? Like, I'm not telling you I know the answer, but is that a fair thing to question? 3 years in a row.
I feel like Campbell was out there a ton.
Yeah.
Now, whether that makes you good or not.
But, like, what are they doing in spring training? Like, it begs the question, what are they doing in spring training? Because last year they were second in errors. 2023, they were second in errors. Right now they're first in errors. and they should have the personnel. So, like, what kind of work, what kind of approach do they have in the offseason? On some level, it's always on the players. They're the ones out there making the errors. But I would start to look at the manager and go, why are you guys below 500? You went out and signed players, which to a degree lets John Henry off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
You have a manager who's been begging for talent the last couple of years. Now you have it, and you're dropping 2 out of 3 to the White Sox. So the spotlight needs to go on him a little bit. You can jump in, 617-779-7937. I was thinking about this today, Keith. You know, the Bruins had this brutal start to the year.
They sure did.
And I think early on...
end to the year.
Well, this is my point.
And middle.
Early on, people were like, well, it's early and the Bruins are going to be fine. And I subscribe to that. And I subscribe to that right now with the Red Sox. Oh, it's early. Don't overreact. It's early. It turns out with the Bruins mercilessly getting to the end of their year, their slow start, their crummy start, it informed the whole season. I mean, they never really truly dug out of the funk to start their year. And I don't know. I hope the Red Sox aren't in the same spot. The Bruins spent a bunch of money this offseason. They tried to upgrade their talent just like the Red Sox tried to. The Bruins never dug out of it. So for all the small sample size, slow start, it's early people, I would ask you to think about the Bruins, who, speaking of them, Greg had a report this morning.
Yeah, Scoop Central.
Did you catch this live? I did not.
I heard it after the fact.
So were you guys talking about this in the crossover?
Yeah, we talked about it in the crossover.
Okay, you did. So I couldn't hear that
down
the hall.
So Greg believes this Wednesday there could be a resignation from someone in the front office.
Who's
he? Doesn't say who.
Who's he?
What do you mean, who's he?
No, when the clip there, when it says, who's he? He gone. Who's so he? Sweeney? Neely?
This is me guessing.
Yeah.
Sweeney. That's a guess.
Why Sweeney, not Neely? Neely's too insulated from the Jacobs family.
Yeah, also,
or within
I don't think
Jacobs family.
Sure. And I also don't think Neely's going to get blamed for the bad drafts over the years, which, I'll be honest, I think are a little overstated, but generally, it's looked at that he's a bad drafter.
I mean, Sweeney's a poor drafter.
But like,
it might be overstated, Swayman, but he's not good.
But there's some guy, like, it's not all bad. Plus, they traded so many of their picks.
Uh-huh.
But let's just say, for the most part, everybody looks at him as a bad drafter, right? I'll give you that. So you have a pretty important draft coming up. Also, he's about to have to hire, his third head coach in 4 years or whatever it is? I guess not higher than 4 years, but you know what I'm saying. Like, in his tenure, hiring yet another coach.
Yeah, he hired Cassidy.
Yeah.
He hired Montgomery, right? Yeah. Did he hire Cassidy? That was still him.
He did hire Cassidy. Yeah.
And Sacco kind of sort of counts, I guess not really. That'll be his third hire if he makes it to the offseason.
So that's kind of tough, right? And that's why I wonder if it's one of those, hey, we're either going to fire you or you can resign type of thing. Now, I guess Neely is a possibility. I wouldn't rule it out, right? I feel like Sweeney's more likely, though.
Don't you kind of? So I would agree with you. I think Sweeney's more likely than Neely. Based on Greg's reporting, there's no indication it would be both, but I feel like they're pretty tied to the hip.
Yeah.
Is there any chance they're both out? That'd be great news. Neely and Sweeney both out would be great news.
And then does that, you mentioned Chara being back in the organization?
Well,
does that have something to do with it?
I wasn't going to, but good point. Chara's kind of looming over the whole thing. Because he's 7 feet tall.
He does that to everybody, yeah.
But also, he was brought in late, and when he was brought in, we're kind of raising our antenna going, what the hell's up with that?
Yeah.
So could he usurp some power in the front office? Maybe. But Greg Hill is hearing there will be a resignation in the Bruins front office on Wednesday.
Wednesday.
We were already planning on talking to Scott McLaughlin that day, so that times out pretty well. We'll have McLaughlin in studio to break it all down. Should there be big Bruins breaking news? I initially said, Keith, how do you let Sweeney run the whole trade deadline, trade away the whole team, and then turn around and fire him? I don't think he's resigning by his own choice. My guess is he's getting nudged out, and they're going to frame it as a resignation.
But
you made a good point.
What does he do well?
He does well with the NHL trades.
Trades. And so they...
And he does poor, even if it's overstated. He does poor with the drafting. So maybe they hit it perfectly.
And maybe Jacobs or even Neely were like, hey, we give you the green light on all these guys to trade. Right, you could trade Marchand. You can
get rid of whoever you want.
Boyle,
bring in
Carlo.
Whatever you want. You got the green light on that, and then they turn around and fire him because somebody else needs to make the fourth pick or whatever it is. That's not a bad
think about it.
Not a bad way to go about it.
I know.
I don't know if that's what the Bruins are doing, but you want Sweeney to make your trades. You don't want him to draft,
right?
So you let him run the trade deadline, and then you bring in somebody else to draft.
And people speculating Sacco. No, I think it's above Sacco. Sacco's an interim head coach. He's gone anyway. I don't think that's what it would be.
He's
not going to resign.
He's not going to resign. He doesn't even have a job.
He's like,
in terms of like job
guys
security.
Guys resign. They're like, dude, what?
Okay. He's also not, the way it's worded, at least in Chris's tweet, is that it's a Bruins front office member. He's not a front office member. Yeah, and I don't think he's going to be resigning. Does he even have a contract beyond the year?
No. It's not him. He'll be gone, and it'll be yet another head coach in there.
617-779-7937. That's the Bruins in their draft. Speaking of the NFL draft, it's a mock draft Monday on Jones and Keefe. We'll give you a mock. We'll break it down. We'll react to it next.
I missed a lot of those mock drafts.
Draft picks are a joke.
This draft season sucks. Thanks so much.
Jones and Keefe here on a mock draft Monday. Every Monday from now until the draft, which is 10 days, 9 hours, 12 minutes, 48 seconds, 46, 45.
Man, we are sneaking up on seconds. It, huh?
We are.
That's exciting.
As of Thursday, we'll be 1 week out from the NFL draft. Field Yates of ESPN going to join us at 10:30 on Thursday.
Very good.
So mark that down as we continue with our draft coverage. We'll give you a mock here in a moment. Just real quick, because you mentioned it to me off the air, and I was just reading an item from Florio about it. The video of Jordan at the UNC.
Yeah, what is going on there?
Practice. She's like out on the field.
Walking around on the field while the players are practicing.
Like fussing around with Bill's microphone and stuff.
What is happening? What has happened maybe is the better question. But that is strange. For even like, there's a lot of Bill defenders, and there's a lot of the quote unquote, he's living his best life.
Yeah,
like, there's a lot of those guys.
Good for you, Bill.
Yeah.
What a dream.
Yeah. There's a lot of those guys, and that's fine. You want her traipsing around the field? What player wives or coach wives are on the field during spring practice?
On the field in the middle of practice, not on the sideline.
Yeah.
On the field.
That could be your future Miss Maine, by the way.
Yeah, she's
all you maniacs.
She is running for.
She's in the mix.
Miss Maine.
Yep. She could be Miss Maine.
So, good job by Terps. On the field.
Or Mrs. Maine, if Bill Belichick has his way soon.
That's a good point.
Look, she's wearing, like she looks like she's like going on stage at
Coachella. Bill, let me get Bill his microphone. Look, she's like testing the microphone. She runs it over to Bill. Wild.
Who's the coach next to him that like she walked over? He just like looked away. He's like, oh, God, what am I supposed to do now with this? She's like holding him up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very questionable.
Yeah.
Highly questionable.
I would say a bit.
I'll tell you, John Lyons was at this practice. John Lyons, WEEI. You can check it out.
We flew him to Chapel Hill for that?
I don't know. WEEI.com, Odyssey app. He covered the thing firsthand.
He was at practice?
He said Jordan was there. She
sure was.
I didn't quite get the full gamut of what of her involvement in the practice until that video came out.
Is she an assistant coach?
I don't know.
She might be. We pull up the game day rosters, and there she is.
She legitimately might
be. Is she
the one
going to get him Nico Imeliava? Because apparently UNC is the favorite after Tennessee.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Bill's going to bring in the guy. That'll be fun. Bill's going to bring in the guy who is holding out for more money at the University of Tennessee that Tennessee moved on from.
Tennessee, yeah. Wouldn't practice. So they said,
who made the joke
done.
On Friday where they're like, I can't wait. That was
me.
He.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see Bill negotiate. He's going to bring in this guy?
Take that guy? I don't know.
Excellent. Okay.
Good value there, I guess.
Enough about Bill at UNC. Mock Draft Monday, Keith. Everybody knows him. Our guy, Gennaro Felice.
Oh, one of the best.
At NFL.com. NFL.com.
You can't say mock draft season without Gennaro Felice.
He's got a mock draft out now at NFL.com. He has Cam Ward, 1.
God.
Abdul Carter, 2. Travis Hunter, 3.
Oh, no!
I'd quibble on the order, but they're both gone.
Oh, no!
Patriots are on the clock at 4. The pick is obviously Will Campbell, right?
Yeah, gotta be.
Wrong.
What?
Mason Graham
no!
at pick 4.
No! I don't want that.
Is there any merit to at 4, Keith? They're going to need to leave the draft with a tackle. But maybe you could get one late first round or at pick 38.
Okay.
They're going to need to leave the draft with a receiver, I would say, somewhere in the first 2 days, meaning in the first 3 rounds of the draft.
Okay.
Is there any merit to, at 4, because we're both big proponents of you got to take the best player that's there, is there any merit to, well, let's just really beef up on the defensive side of the football, put a premium pick at pick number 4 out there that's not Abdul Carter. I think we'd agree on Carter, Hunter to a degree. Somebody that's not those two guys, continue to beef up the defense. You put all the resources into the defense.
Did.
And we'll figure out tackle and wide receiver later on. We'll get another premium guy here, and we're going to win games on defense. Is there any merit to that approach?
No.
None?
Well, I don't think so because there are plenty of other guys available that I think can help your offense, including the offensive tackle, but there's also skill guys that could help. I don't want Mason Graham. Like, that is... You spent a lot of money on Milton Williams. You talk about resources, right? You spent a lot of it there. You also have Christian Barmore, and I think there's been positive updates on Barmore, right? Like, I think he's going to be able to play. Keon White's still on the team. I know some of these guys play different positions, but your front, Harold Landry was added. Like, just on defense, Mason Graham, I'm not saying he's going to be a bust, but I certainly don't want him with what is available. And at four, this isn't even the, hey, you trade down to nine, you know, because the Saints want a quarterback. You get all these extra picks. Some of the offensive players that we like are off the board, but Graham's still there. Maybe then you could talk me into it. I still wouldn't love that approach, but I hated it at four.
So here's what he has at 24 after Mason Graham. He has the Patriots moving up and taking Kelvin Banks in a trade with the Minnesota Vikings. So to me, you would have to do the second part of that to justify taking a guy like Graham.
Yep.
At pick four. Like, okay, we're taking the best player. We're
another
beefing up our defense.
Who could be a guard.
And then we're going to go get a tackle at 24. I'm not sure that Banks is a tackle, but I'm okay. I'm much more okay taking the risk at 24 with a guy who we're going to start at tackle, see how it goes. And if we got to kick him inside to guard, at least we still have a player.
If we come on the air a week from Friday after round one of the draft and it's just Mason Graham, that's
not
tough.
Happy with it.
No, that's bad. But if it's Graham and an offensive tackle, it's a little bit better. But I would rather offensive tackle and Jenty, offensive tackle and receiver, offensive tackle and Ty Warren. Those are better.
I agree with you. I just wonder if there's a school of thought out there and fans who agree with, we'll keep building on the defense, win games on defense. Drake May should be able to figure it out on offense, win games on defense. By the way, he has Jenty 5, Will Campbell 6, Membu 7, Walker 8, Shadur at 9, Mikel Williams at 10. That's the latest at NFL.com. And a mock draft Monday here on Jones and Keith.
Does he have Dart? I'm scrolling through it. I don't think he has Dart in the first round.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember where he had Dart. Does he have him at 26?
I thought
I saw Dart in there. Maybe not.
I don't think so. So he is down on quarterbacks. He is only two in the top 10.
And I think a lot of what you're reading is, you know, Shadur at the minimum is dropping. The question is how far, and is he dropping below Jackson Dart? So you can jump in here, 617-779-7937. Let's take some calls. Eric's in Wakefield. What's up, Eric?
Hey, guys. Two things, one on the draft and one with the Red Sox first base problem. I'll ask you guys, and then I'll listen to what you have to say. First thing is, don't you think if the Jets got Shadur Sanders, and he turned out to be really, really good, it looks like egg in the Giants' face being two New York-based teams. That's one.
Okay.
And the second thing is, you guys played baseball, and always the best athlete pretty much going through high school is a shortstop, correct?
Pretty much, sure. I mean,
yeah,
I played
okay.
Center field.
Yeah, correct. But I'm 62, and it changed over the years.
No, I got you.
What's the question, Eric? What's the question?
So my second thing is, there's only one thing Tristan Cassius would do better than Maya playing first base, if you put a glove on him at first base, is hit more home runs. That's it.
Okay, so he wants Meyer at first base.
I'm not there yet.
Me neither.
I'm not. I want Meyer up with the big club. And if they keep scuffling, you got to find a place for him.
Well, but we keep saying he's going to get in because Trevor Story's going to get hurt. Story's been their best hitter for the last week.
He's been really good.
So, I mean, give Story his due. I still think he's going to get hurt, and Meyer's position will get sorted out. I'm not moving him to first base. Neil is in Maine on our Bruins conversation. Go ahead, Neil.
Hey, guys. Great show. I love listening to you. I told your screener, I go up and down the country. I live in a van, and if it wasn't for the Odyssey, I couldn't listen to this great station.
Well, there
so
you go.
Very
that's,
thankful.
That's a ringing endorsement for the app.
Hell yeah. Thanks, yeah. Neil.
Yeah, man. So I landed home in Maine. I'm in Bailey Island, Maine. And the whole thing with the Bruins, I was thinking about it for a while this morning when I heard it on the morning show.
Right.
I think what's going to be happening is I think they're going to fire Sweeney.
Okay.
They want to get rid of Sweeney. And Cam Neely is a very loyal, honest guy throughout the years with his contracts with the Bruins and everything else. He stood right by him. So I think Sweeney's going to get fired, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if it's a two-for-one deal, and Cam Neely is upset, and he doesn't like this plan, and he's going to resign.
Oh, he resigns.
So
Sweeney out, and he resigns. So, Neil, can I think we have some questions.
We have several.
Just about what's going on here, so it's a good take. You're when you say you're back home in Maine, you're in the van? Where are you in Maine? You're in the van.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in a van. I work at the Driftwood Inn in Bailey Island, and we haven't opened up yet. So I got up here a little while, about 10 days early. So I'm going to be in my van for the next 10 days as well.
What's the setup in the van look like, Neil? What's the setup looking like? Like a big kind of like rug back there? Or what does it look like?
Water bag?
Yeah, I have a little rug. It's a little van. It's like almost a form of a Waltham little mini apartment.
Oh, it's like Waltham.
Love that. Yeah, great. On wheels.
Sounds like that's where Jaren Duran, we found out in the clubhouse, that's where Jaren Duran lives. You're,
oh,
living,
that's
you're
nice.
Living like Duran.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there you
go. But this past winter, guys, I was listening to you right now on the beaches of Key West.
Wow, brag. So how about that? Well, Neil, good stuff. We,
that's great, Neil.
We appreciate you listening to us all up and down the East Coast in the van. Good stuff.
Yeah. Well, all the way up to Vegas, as a matter of fact.
Vegas, nice.
It's probably the best plug.
Sick brag, bro.
Best plug for the Odyssey I've heard in a long time.
How dare you?
That's pretty good.
I've never
heard, where he goes.
I've never heard such a plug for the Odyssey.
His van and the Odyssey app. He could go all over the country.
How about
all these great places. Listen to the show. Keep up with the show.
He's living on the beaches in Maine, and it's like Waltham.
Also, want to get his take on Jordan being Miss Maine. He'd probably be, I don't know if he's thrilled with that.
Next time.
Take a lot of pride in that,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. Next time. Don't be a stranger. 617-779-7937. We'll mix in all your thoughts. The Red Sox, their terrible weekend. The Masters, we got more thoughts on Rory coming up, plus a mock draft Monday. All your thoughts on the Patriots and their pick at number 4. Let's mix in a few on Jaylen Brown as well. Ominous reporting, I thought, from Ramona Shelburne. I know the team tried to talk that down. Is it time to worry about Jaylen and his knee? That's next.